We have to admit to ourselves that drugs are a big part of life in America. Watch commercial TV for just a few minutes, and you'll probably see ads for prescription medicines to address one condition or another. And we've been talking for decades at least, and perhaps forever, about the drugs that people take to get intoxicated. The opioid prescription painkillers are the focus at the moment, and the drug that people often turn to replace the opioids, heroin. Whatever the drug, our guests this hour have probably met someone addicted to it and have helped them get back to some sense of normality in life. They are from Addictions Recovery Center based in Medford. Dr. Daryl Inaba is the behavioral and clinical health director there. Dr. Inaba, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Nice to be here.
Good to have you. And Phil Bettine is with us as well, the chief programs officer at ARC. Thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome, Jeffrey. Good to be here.
Can we get, first of all, the ARC story? Apparently started with as a program for veterans. Is that right?
That's correct. We're just talking about that. 50 years ago in Josephine County, a couple decided that they wanted to help vets coming back from the war and open an alcohol rehab center in their home in Josephine County. And they were there for a while. And then we moved to Gold Hill up on Sardine Creek. And we had a residential program up there that served men and women in a residential model up until the late 80s. And moved into the Medford area. Actually, we're in a motel down on Riverside. We opened up a program there, a residential program, prior to our move to our current residential program, which is on West Main, 1003 West Main in Medford. And that's where our main residential program is. So we've been doing alcohol and drug treatment in Jackson and Josephine County for 50 years.
So a residential program, how many other different kinds of programs are there within the umbrella that is ARC?
Well, the ARC is actually expanding. We have a pretty big umbrella right now. And one of the things I think about on the way over here, Jeffrey, is one of the things that we talk about all the time is that the ARC has grown to meet the needs of the client. So our progress and our growth has always been client-driven. And so we offer a wide variety of services today. We started out with residential, started doing outpatient programs in the 80s probably, and expanded those in the 90s. Our campuses have grown. We have the West Main campus. We have two East Main campuses. We have a detox and sobering center on 3rd and Front. We just bought a new building, actually, on East Main, the 1025, the old mental health, Jackson County Mental Health building, and have an array of services in there and room for expansion in there. So we do residential, outpatient. We have a domestic awareness education program. We do get a gambling treatment program. We also serve people that have received DUIs on all levels of DUI. So probably the number of clients we will serve this year is a little over 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
And our employee base right now just crossed over the 120 mark. So we have 120 plus or minus employees in all of those services.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are, again, the client-driven, expanding to meet the need. But, of course, as everybody's aware, and you mentioned in your opening, there's a huge need right now. And we are able to provide certainly not an encompassing solution to the alcohol and drug problem in the Rogue Valley. We serve probably a smaller majority of the need in the valley, and we are running full tilt. We have a walk-in clinic that we have 10 to 20 people walk in every morning, and we serve as many of those people we can and admit most in various programs in our program. And every morning we have people waiting on our door seeking services. That a lot of them are homeless, a lot of them off the street, a lot of them are involved in the opioid crisis right now, and a lot is driven by heroin addiction. And
so you're not the only game in town. I mean, there are other places that do treat people with addictions, and I'm just curious if you have any idea what percentage of that you're dealing with at ARC.
Of the total addiction population in Jackson County?
Right.
I think, and maybe Dr. Inaba can speak to this better, my guess is that only a small minority of the addicted population actually makes it to a treatment center.
Any treatment center.
And I'm going to say like 10%. And I don't see if Daryl's shaking his head or not. But the majority of them never make it to the front door. And if they don't get to the front door, we can't serve them. And they don't get to the front door for a lot of different reasons. There's a lot of barriers to people getting the treatment that are involved in and have an addictive process going on. And those barriers include family and transportation and finances and whatever the barriers are, there's not enough open doors to treat addiction in the Rogue Valley.
Dr. Naba, does it seem like the drugs change, but that addiction itself is relatively consistent?
Dependent upon a drug, there are some variations in terms of physiological and mental problems that you have to specifically treat. But addiction is addiction, whether it's alcohol, whether it's actually gambling, or whether it's heroin, whether it's cocaine or even marijuana. For those who are affected, not everybody's going to be an addict. That's an important thing to stress, Jeff, that the majority of people who try these drugs, who drink alcohol, will never meet medical diagnostic criteria for alcohol use disorder. About 15% of people who take a drink of alcohol in their life will eventually meet medical diagnostic criteria, because addiction is a biological process, and certain people are vulnerable to this condition. And for those people who do meet it, it's a horror story. It's really something they didn't want. It's not something that they're out there pleasure-seeking. It's just a total hijacking of their survival mechanisms, their underlying survival mechanisms of their brain. That's why we seem to have still continual denial, say, of marijuana addiction, because only about 8 to 10% of everybody who ever takes a hit on a joint or does an edible or does a vape will meet medical diagnostic criteria.
But you're saying you can be physically addicted to marijuana?
Absolutely. You can be physically and emotionally addicted to marijuana. And we treat some of those at the ARC who are still even sort of laughed at by their fellow clients who are heroin addicts. Say, why don't you go out there and get a real addiction before you take the space of somebody who needs treatment. But for that person, it's a horror story.
All right, let's come back and talk more about some of the mechanics of addiction and how the mechanics of addiction treatment work as well. We're talking to Dr. Daryl Inaba and Phil Bettine from the Addictions Recovery Center, ARC, based in Medford, serving about 2,000 people in Jackson County a year with 120 staff. We'll come back and talk more with them. And you can join us by phone or email to talk about your stories, your questions, your comments. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about addictions and addiction treatment today with the folks from Addictions Recovery Center in Medford. The Behavioral and Clinical Health Director, Dr. Daryl Inaba, is here in the studio with me, along with the Chief Programs Officer, Phil Bettine. You can join us on the exchange with your story of addiction in you or someone you know. We do only use first names, so you wouldn't be well known to the audience. And if you prefer by email, that's fine too. jx@jeffnet.org. Otherwise, take your phone calls to 800-838-3760. I got a little bit of a correction during the break, which I appreciate. And having been around a fair number of alcoholics in my life, I know this too, or should. You don't get unaddicted, Daryl Inaba. You just stop taking what you're addicted to.
Actually, yes, it's a chronic persistent medical disorder, not unlike diabetes or asthma. And so we don't cure those conditions. We only treat it and manage it. And if you have addiction, then you enter into continual management of your condition where you're not impacted by it. And that's called recovery in addiction. Same thing with a diabetic. You monitor your blood sugar, you monitor your health, and you are the healthiest you can be, but you always have diabetes.
So I want to come back to something you'd said before the break about the fact that not everyone is an addict. You know, about 15% of the people who drink, for example, will end up developing a physical dependence on it. So who is an addict? I mean, what are some of the things that determine what makes addiction in a person?
Yeah, the etiology of addiction has always fascinated me, and I've looked at and participated in a lot of research studies to try and find, even work with Dr. Linus Pauling's group, who believed it was a non-fixed allergic response that people had to the drug that they're addicted to. But where it boils down to, as far as I'm concerned, and for National Institute on Drug Abuse and other things, that addiction results from a combination of three factors. The first one is genetics. There are 89 genes we have identified that are associated with a person's proclivity to become an addict, or some people are born with genes that will protect them from being an addict. And the second factor is environment. Trauma, stress, all different foods, pesticides, different things that you are exposed to in your environment changes your brain chemistry, changes your brain connections, and moves a person's brain toward that addictive liability. There's a thing called epigenetics, which is really powerful, meaning it actually changes the expression of your genes. And you could be a normie and then all of a sudden shift in your genes and all of a sudden manifest your addictive gene and you become an addict.
So you, again, this is epigenetics as opposed to genetics, where
right.
it's not the genes themselves changing, it's how they're expressed.
The expression of the genes changed. And the final thing is actually toxicology, or these drugs are not produced in the brain. The brain doesn't produce heroin, but it does produce 200 chemicals called the endorphins. And the endorphins are your natural substances that the heroin copies. Your catecholamines are the natural substances that cocaine and methamphetamine copy. Anandamide and the endocannabinoids are the natural chemicals that your brain produces that marijuana copies. And all drugs of addiction merely copy the effects of different drugs in your brain. And when you put in a substitute, like you put in heroin, your own brain recognizes or mistakes that as an overabundance of that chemical and turns that off. With alcoholism, it's GABA and serotonin. They turn off. So in essence, by your continued use, you have to keep drinking just to feel like you're functioning or you're surviving. And that all those three factors, genetics, environment, and then toxicology, change the brain cells and change their connections, change their chemistry, and bring about this biological, physiological condition that we actually passed a law in 2008, the Addiction Equity Act, that recognizes addiction and alcoholism as a true medical disorder, not unlike diabetes, not unlike asthma, and that people with this condition should be treated like they have a chronic medical condition.
So that would result in not only changes in approaches in the medical treatment of addictions, but also in the criminal justice implications, too, as well. I mean, that has become part of the issue here, hasn't it?
It should and can, but unfortunately, nobody seems to be paying attention to that law, and it's being ignored on all levels. I think part of it might be economics or medical health insurance industry and all that other stuff, but only now after all these years and after the Affordable Care Act that was supposed to implement the regulations for this law in 2014, I think 10 states have initiated suits against insurance companies and against hospitals and things saying you're not providing the level of treatment that this law says you're supposed to provide for treatment.
We're talking about addictions here in the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Daryl Inaba and Phil Bettine from Addictions Recovery Center, ARC, based in Medford. So when people come to ARC, I mean, where do they go first, Phil Bettine? I'm just curious to know about how people engage with your services in the first place.
To deal with the demand, we've actually established, and I think I mentioned it earlier, a walk-in clinic at our 1025 East Main facility where people that are seeking services can walk into our program anywhere from 8 a.m. in the morning to 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and we will do an intake and an assessment and determine, as Dr. Inaba says, their level of care or their level of need in the program, or even if they need our services or other services. We also have mental health providers on site, so we do dual diagnosis treatment also. And so the first step is to get connected with the ARC, and the best way to do that is to come to our walk-in clinic at 1025 East Main between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m., and we will figure out the services you need. And we have a wide array of services, and we're good collaborators within the community. And so if we can't help you, we will get you to somebody that can help you.
Those don't seem like hours of the day when things are necessarily acute. I mean, if somebody's having a real problem with addiction in the moment, needs services right now, are they going to end up in an emergency room instead
of ARC? Most people, and that's the reason for our walk-in clinic and our sobering unit over on 3rd and Front, is that we're kind of a diversion for the ED. And so our hope is that we will cut down on emergency room visits and that we can triage addicts prior to needing to go to the emergency department and get them headed in a direction that will allow them to seek a different solution to their addiction problem other than just going to the emergency department all the time.
So some of these programs would seem to be fairly time intensive. I mean, if you're going to go to an inpatient program where you know, you're assigned to a room and a bed and all that stuff, how long does that program take, Phil?
Well, it could take... We kind of designate 90 days, but probably our average length of stay in residential is about 45, 50 days right now. And it's a co-ed facility, the one on our residential program in West Main. And so probably 45 to 50 days is our average length of stay, but people stay longer. Some people stay 90 days, some people stay 120 days. outpatient programs. What we know about addiction is the longer we can keep the addict connected to a treatment program, the better potential outcome they have. So if we can keep somebody connected through detox and residential and outpatient and our recovery support groups for a year and a half, the longer they stay connected to recovery and we get them connected to a 12-step community, Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, we get them connected to a 12-step program that will continue to support the gains they've made in treatment. And our whole goal is to engage them in those community support programs, those 12-step programs, that will offer them a place to go lifetime. So we get them in the door, we get them stabilized, we give them some education and information, we connect them to 12-step recovery programs, and that really is the process for most people. And other people get clean and sober different ways than that, but I would say the majority of people, that the best practices and the research has shown the best outcome for people that complete a treatment program, get connected to 12-step recovery. And then it's a lifetime, like Dr. Naba said. This disease is a disease that doesn't go away. We always have it once we have it. And so the rest of their life is spent involved in keeping their disease in remission. And I'll share that I'm 35 years clean and sober, and I still attend 12-step support groups and still do things around to support and my own recovery. And I've been doing that for 35 years, and my goal is to do it for the rest of the time that I have on the planet, just to keep doing the work that keeps me in the chair and keeps me clean and sober.
Did you ever stop or ever think you could stop going to 12-step groups?
Did I ever stop?
Mm-hmm.
I've never stopped going to 12-step programs in 35 years. And we were talking about this earlier about how treatment doesn't always seem to work for people all the time. I was kind of an anomaly. And I was ready to go to treatment when I went there in 1982, and I've been clean and sober since that time, which is rather unusual. And it's nothing really to say about me other than I had really good people around me to support me and steer me in the right direction. So a lot of times people think treatment doesn't work because people go time and time again. But we consider we're just planting seeds for the next time when it does work. And we see people that have multiple contacts with us and seem not to get clean and sober, but then they'll come back a month later, a year later, and then they're ready to get clean and sober. And then we can help them get clean and sober.
We're talking about addictions and addiction treatment with Phil Bettine, the Chief Programs Officer, and Dr. Daryl Anaba, the Behavioral and Clinical Health Director at Addictions Recovery Center, ARC, in Medford. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. You may have many questions, as I do, about how addiction takes hold and what are some of the components of treatment that we'll be talking about coming up. Join us on the Exchange with questions, comments, stories, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Daryl, we were talking about the three major components of addiction: genetics, environment, and toxicology. What are the major components of treatment?
Major components of treatment is first of all, to get the chemical out of your system. The main thing that I want to stress here is the brain is an amazing organ. It's very resilient. It's very flexible. You have neuroplasticity. And although you don't recover from your addiction, because your addiction is always part of physiology of brain cells, what it is how your brain cells function, how you function in life, how you respond to life, that has great opportunity to come back into full health and great ability to have wonderful life. Phil's a great example of that, as are all recovering people. We call them miracles because they have so much talents and so much abilities. And when they enter the program or they monitor, they maintain themselves in a recovery effort, they gain so much wonderful advantages because they have really wonderful brains to begin with that gets hijacked by these drugs. And the components of recovery is first to get the drug out of your system. Some people have so severe alcoholism and so severe opiate addiction or other types of addiction, they really need to have a medical intervention. They will actually die in their withdrawal process or suffer bodily injury. And after that, then we've got to get them into initial abstinence, which is understanding that they're going to have craving, that their brain has not returned to its function. Actually, in our research, it takes up to 2 years before the brain comes back into just functional level where they can respond to life like they did before they had the drug addiction. And then they do long-term abstinence, and that's dealing with putting the wreckage of their life. Addiction is going to make you do horrendous things. You have catastrophic consequences, so you have big problems. You got to put that back in your life. And then you enter the final phase of recovery, and that's finding the life joys, finding the quality of life, things that you really gain value out of. You immerse yourself into it. That's without taking drugs, and that's a whole four-step process, and it's a lifelong process.
As people have been talking about the opioid epidemic in America, though, I mean, it tends to be spoken of in terms of this is something that happens in towns where there seems to be no hope, no jobs, that sort of thing, where drugs is a logical place for people to turn. I mean, when the reality is not going to be that great, once you emerge from the addiction, is it that much harder to keep people from going back to what they're addicted to?
It is hard, but, you know, I want to dispel that sort of myth, because that's certainly some Harvard professors and a lot of sociologists who claims it's a reaction to the life stresses and the depravity and the biases that's happened, the racism and all that. But no, addiction, I think it was Chris Mason said it last night, our CEO, who says, you know, we treat people under the bridge. We treat people who are driving over the bridge. We treat people who are making the bridge, and we treat people who own the bridge. Addiction affects everybody in life, and it has the greatest consequences on our whole society, economic, health-wise, social-wise, and things like that. You talk about the opiate addiction. We just had a major opiate scene in Silicon Valley where people are making hundreds of millions of dollars a year. We've had overdoses there. People have died there making tremendous salaries. So it's not just where you're environment is contributing. So when I was in San Francisco, we treated people who were destitute and who were suffering a lot. But if they can gain recovery and they can gain their islands of sobriety and they can participate in these 12-step groups for their lives, although it is challenging, that it's hard getting jobs and making your lives and things like that, it is possible. When they find that and when they invest themselves in that, the quality of their life changes so dramatically. It's just a miracle to see.
Phil Bettine and Daryl Inaba are guests on the Jefferson Exchange from Addictions Recovery Center in Medford. Talk about, if you would, Dr. Inaba, what non-addicted people, people who don't have addictions, what they need to understand about people who do have addictions.
The big thing they need to understand is that it's not about an addict just being a pleasure seeker. It's not about them having weak morals or having bad decision processes. It's an actual biological process. Addiction starts not in the conscious brain. It starts pretty much in our lizard and mammalian parts of our brain, our unconscious brain, our instincts, our preservation drives. Every living creature has a drive to live and to survive. And that's what gets kidnapped and those who are vulnerable to addiction. It's a biological condition. I've seen, I think, over 350,000 addicts and alcoholics during my career. Not one of them started using pot or using heroin or using cocaine just so they can come in and be a patient of mine.
Right.
In treatment, nobody thinks
they
are going to become
ideas.
That way.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a vulnerable brain, in that people have to understand that addiction is not about, you know, a person's what they're trying to be. Addiction is a true hijacking of the brain. They have an illness just like we don't, you know, if you had, say, panic disorder, or if you had diabetes, or you had asthma. We don't make that distinction in stigma as we do against addiction. So we have to get rid of that stigma. We have to provide treatment opportunities. Phil says, I think, only about 1 out of 23 people who meet medical diagnostic criteria for addiction and who want and need treatment are able to access treatment every year. Now, that's a tragedy. That's really a tragedy. If you're talking, making another point, one thing I like to see is I like to see treatment on demand. I like to see programs that are open 24/7, 365 days a year. And when somebody says they've had it or their lives are so disrupted and they come in at 3 in the morning, we can get them right into treatment. We can do something. There are some cities experimenting with that now in their police departments. You can go into a police department. They won't bust you for your heroin. They'll put you right into treatment at 3 in the morning. And I think that's what we need in society. We need to be able to provide treatment on demand. Treatment has so many viable studies that show they have positive outcomes, not only on the person, but on society. I don't see why we have limited resources. You know, we provide jail and we arrest people and all. We put 90% of all of our dollars going to police addiction. If we reverse that formula, put all that money into treating addicts and preventing addicts, we get much more bang for the buck than we are right now trying to keep drugs off the street. And that's what I believe in.
Phil Bettine, you mentioned the walk-in clinic, but do people come to you sometimes as part of a program from a release from jail or something?
Certainly, we're connected with drug courts, and we actually are running the family drug court now, and we have about 40 clients in that court, and there's two other drug courts in Jackson County that have a pretty high population that are being monitored by the court. And it is a transition program, so maybe they don't have to suffer the full consequences of some kind of criminal act that they've engaged in to sustain their addiction. And so they have an opportunity to go through treatment instead of go to jail or suffer other consequences.
Briefly, because we're getting close to a break, Daryl had said about only 1 in 23 people get the treatment they need. Is there still a vast need that is just unaddressed in Jackson County?
There's a huge need that's unaddressed, and you know, we had a provider shut down for a while, and that put stress on the delivery system in Jackson County. Anyway,
was that on track?
Another program shut down, and they're coming back on board now, and we're hoping that they'll come back on board and that they will get back to their level of service that will provide more services for the people in Jackson County. But right now, we certainly don't have close to the number of services that we need to deal with all addictions in Jackson County.
Okay, more about addiction and treatment in Southern Oregon in 1 minute here on the Jefferson Exchange. Final segment of today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about drug addiction. It's actually not just drugs we're talking about, because it involves things like gambling addictions as well. These are all things known to and treated by Addictions Recovery Center based in Medford, dealing with both Jackson and Josephine County. Phil Bettine is the Chief Programs Officer. Dr. Daryl Inaba is Behavioral and Clinical Health Director. You can join the conversation on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Questions, comments, stories, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. A couple of emails here from Jim Notown Given. He says, can people find help and move to recovery even if they're agnostic or atheist? I highly regard the work of 12-step programs, but I can't abide the God/scriptural language, says Jim. He says also hello to Phil, with whom I shared a support group. So let's put that to you, Phil.
Can they get clean and sober without God in their life? Yeah, the answer to that question is yes. The program talks about a power greater than ourselves. It talks about a higher power. And some people use God as an acronym for good orderly direction or group of drunks. And so do you have to have the religious, spiritual part of the 12-step program to recover? No, we see lots of people that are very successful in recovery that are agnostics and atheists, and they use other forms of support and powers greater than themselves to achieve that goal.
We have another email here. It comes in anonymous, but given the subject matter, I'll let this one come through. From the Rogue Valley, it says, addicts are not just street people. Some are very affluent, or some very affluent and successful people, successful in quotes, may be considered addicts. Their loved ones are affected. I refer loved ones to Al-Anon. Does the ARC serve the affluent? If there are alternatives for the affluent who may be concerned for their anonymity, what are they? What kind of programs are out there? Phil?
Well, certainly Dr. Inaba said we serve people from all different positions from the bridge, and we also serve the people that build the bridge. But our population is a lot of Medicare right now, and a lot of people in the Oregon Health Plan. But we do also take commercial insurance, and we do have services for people that are quote-unquote affluent if they want to seek our services. There are other providers in the state. I don't know of any locally that seem to be more like, you know, the Betty Ford Centers of the world, or there's programs up north.
The high-end rehab.
Hazleton has a program up in Newburgh that's for addicted healthcare professionals. And so, you know, there's a bed for everybody someplace. And part of our job is to help you find the right bed. And if it's not with us, we'll help you find it wherever that needs to be.
You mentioned one other place that had gone offline for a while in Jackson County, coming back on now. I mean, what is the constellation in Jackson County outside of ARC? I mean, how many other places treat drug addiction?
I would think about that on the way in, and there's probably five or six other primary alcohol and drug treatment programs. Most of them are smaller than ours and the program that's coming back on right now, but still have vital services and do a great service to the community. I think right now, as far as census and population and workforce, we're the largest up and running right now. But there's a number of them in the valley that also provide the same services we do, and maybe not the array of services we do, but they provide other like parts and pieces of all the services that we provide.
So what does it cost? I mean, just in dollars, what does it cost? And Dr. Nalby, you might know both what it costs basically just to get somebody intake, get them clean, get them into support programs, and then versus the cost, for example, of putting somebody in jail.
The exact detail costs, I don't know. I think overall, we've done a lot of studies on that, showing the cost efficacy of putting people in treatment versus non-treating. And every study that's been done, very rigorous studies throughout the United States, is showing that the minimum is that for every dollar spent treating an addict, whether it's very high-end residential treatment or medical treatment, or it's low-end outpatient and educational treatment, saves about $7 that you would spend if you didn't treat them, because the higher end of costs, of course, the criminal justice system, the emergency rooms, the hospital stays, all of that stuff. So basically, it may cost us right now some family or something or a person a couple of thousand, $3,000 or $4,000 to do some outpatient treatment versus, residential costs, which is about close to about $50 or $60 a day, something like that. Phil,
$150
a day. Yeah. So there is a cost associated with that, but the cost is much cheaper than not treating the addiction.
And again, we accept most major insurance plans, including the Oregon Health Plan and commercial insurances. So that reduces the cost for the individual.
Let me take a call here from Tracy in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Phil Bettine and Daryl Inaba.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hey, Tracy.
Hi. I lost my daughter 3 years ago to addiction, and I think the thing I'm still learning so much by listening to your shows, and it's if I won the lottery, I would do something major, and I think it would be for housing, maybe for recovering addicts. That seems to be a problem. I think one of the downfalls that we ran into is previous to her passing was finding housing where they didn't do credit checks, because for about 7 years, as things went downhill, there was no credit. So, and ultimately, she ended up living in an apartment building that had heroin dealers in it. So, I don't know. I'm just wondering what is the Oregon area, or what does the Medford area do about? Is there better solutions for housing
Okay.
for people who are recovering?
No, good question. And I'm sorry about what happened with your daughter, Tracy. Thanks for calling to tell us about it, Phil.
Thank you.
It's always going to be a barrier for people in recovery to get a safe place to live after they complete any kind of services with us. We know that the vacancy rate in Medford, Ashland, is less than 1%. Housing prices are going up. I just saw where some outside entity bought an apartment building and raised the rent on fixed income people 45%. And so we do have transitional housing. We have a capacity to serve some of the clients coming out of our treatment programs, but we're always looking for housing and working and collaborating with people in our area that help people with indigent housing and trying to get into places where it's safe. And you're right, Tracy. If you put a healthy person in a sick environment, the environment doesn't get healthy. The person gets sick. And so we're looking for safe places for people to live post-treatment, where they have a modicum of a chance of maintaining their sobriety, and always an issue.
I want to come back to the difficulties in breaking addictions and the numbers that you feel. It sounds like it took pretty early with you in your own situation 35 years ago. But I mean, is there a generally accepted number, Dr. Daryl Inaba, for how many times people are going to have to go through a program before it takes?
I don't know if accepted is the right word. Of course, we don't like to see any. And Phil, you're right. It is unusual that people gain recovery right from the first time they get into treatment and keep on it. There is an average number. And it's different for every drug. An average number of, say, relapses in alcoholism after you formally complete a program is about 4 completed programs. In addition to that, there's a lot of alcoholics who never complete programs. They go into programs and they leave before the treatment can be engaged and things like that. And then there are people who are chronic relapsers. People go in time after time drinking right away after they leave. And so there has been a science trying to understand it. Why are there differences? And we're finding that, again, it's the brain, that there are unique differences in the brain. And actually, there are about 3 to 5 places in the brain that can predict whether or not you're going to relapse when you leave a safe environment like a residential program, with about 95% accuracy just on how that part of the brain is functioning. And the message for that is then, if we can use this to then tell insurance companies or convince you that you shouldn't leave right now, you need to stay more than the 3 months, you need to stay more than 6 months. In the research that's been done at National Institute of Drug Abuse and elsewhere and all over the world, they're finding that the brain takes at least 6 to 8 months to gain back its functionality, some of its functionality just from addiction, and about 2 years before it gains back most of its functionality. So you need rigorous, non-intervened treatment. You need to be in a safe place among safe people where you're not going to be triggered to use again for that time. So we have that, but it's so expensive to do those brain studies, about $4,000 per brain scan.
And these fMRIs, that sort of thing?
Yeah, functional MRIs, PET scans, SPECT scans, things like that. And then there is the memory process. You're going to form emotional memories from the drugs and actually form an emotional bond. We can actually trigger people under research and see these parts of your brain light up like you formed a bond with that drug, like you formed with your child or with a loved one or with your career and things like that. And those memories are triggered so easily with these actual physical memory footsteps that we find in the brain that we need to have time to rewire the brain, actually wire it around those so those parts of the brain aren't activated. And that's called extinction, and we actually have processes to do that. And then finally, an addict will develop or has developed a hypersensitivity to stress, and that's the science of it. So we need, that's why we have trauma-informed care in Oregon, that we need to continue to provide places that are less stressful for people so that they can maintain recovery. But if you stay clean and sober long enough and you work your program, as Phil said, then you can enter into long-term sobriety, which is actually a wonderful thing. You start feeling great, you're life changes all around. You start seeing quality of life. It's just a miracle. Yeah. And that's why we're all in this business.
But about 2 years, you say?
Yeah, you know, 2 years minimum.
Yeah, minimum. Yeah. All right. Let's take a call here from LaSalle in Grants Pass. Thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to briefly share a little bit of my experience. I am 15 years sober, and I also have worked with the Drug Court programs and the Jefferson County Drug Court Theater programs. As the director there. So I have I come from a family of recovering alcoholics, and so I have a lot of personal experience with addiction. And what I really wanted to speak to here is the piece that one of your callers had written in about the issue of that first step, finding a connection to God. And I am not a religious person, and that was a piece that I had huge resistance to when I first became sober. And what I have discovered, and certainly many recovery programs speak to this, is, you know, it really is not about God. It's about finding something to connect to that is bigger than ourselves, some meaning in life that is greater than our own individual existence. And that can be so many things. And what I would love to see, particularly in our area, which is a, you know, we're pretty small area, and we lack some of the diversity that say a big city may have. I would love to see a little more networking to what some of those other possibilities might be for that connection to something greater than ourselves, because the churches are wonderful and that works for many people, but it doesn't work for everybody. So, you know, whether it's getting involved in community service, getting involved in an education program can be it, and a real calling and a career. You know, for some people it can be their families. And I'll stop, and I'd love to hear the response.
So some sense of purpose is what I'm hearing all around here. And I think you were getting a big nod from you, Dr. Inaba.
Absolutely. You know, there are secular organizations for recovery, rational recovery. There's science of recovery. There are these other groups who are interested in these non-God aspects of recovery and bonding into some purpose and some group. It's important for addicts, regardless of what their spiritual belief is to understand that they're not alone, that they're part of a whole group of individuals who are struggling with the same struggles they are and who's having trouble trying to understand what they're doing. And just sharing and being able to interact with that is a big plus in terms of helping them promote continued sobriety.
And Phil, what did you say the GOD can stand for in some cases?
Good Orderly Direction, yeah. or Group
yeah.
of Drunks.
Yeah.
we'll take the first one, yeah. Good Orderly Direction. So, I mean, I guess the final question needs to be, we're almost out of time. I mean, are addictions always going to be with us? I mean, given the science of the brain, is this just likely to continue happening, Dr. Daryl Inaba?
Yes, it does. Up to this point, there are advances. Because we understand the actual biology and the physiology and the anatomy of addiction, there are looking, believe it or not, at genetic processes. We know the genes. We've identified all of them. There is now editing process. We can edit genes.
CRISPR?
We can actually, CRISPR-Cas. We can actually edit the expression of genes. We can also put in optolites that cause the genes to twist a different way. And so there's that being done with animals that shows that they can cure their addiction. But I think that's unnecessary. I think we have a way of dealing with it. If we can just promote it, put enough resources in it, I think we can make a big change in how we're dealing with addiction today.
All right. Many programs available at Addictions Recovery Center based in Medford. Dr. Daryl Inaba is the Behavioral and Clinical Health Director. Phil Bettine is the Chief Programs Officer. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange for a rousing discussion.
Thank you, Jeffrey.